This podcast is about your future. What if the next years of your life can be the best years of your life? When full-time work becomes optional, you'll have the time to do all the things you've always wanted to do, if only you had the time. And soon you will. But to make the most of it, you'll need to be well prepared, and that goes well beyond your financial planning. Each week, your host, Joe Casey, is inviting you into conversations with his guests to bring you insights, inspiration, and practical ideas to design your new life, a life you'll build around what matters most to you and on your own terms. Let's get started.
There's a lot to do when you're planning for retirement. But for many people, that's not the only transition you need to prepare for. There are other life transitions as well. If you have children, you need to navigate the relationships with your children who are becoming adults, and that changes the game. Our guest today has terrific insights and valuable information on both of those transitions, retirement and managing relationships with adult children, as well as becoming an empty nester. Celia Dodd is the author of the new book, All Grown Up, Nurturing Relationships with Adult Children. Celia is a UK journalist and author who wrote regularly for The Times, The Independent, and other national newspapers and magazines, focusing on relationships, family life, health, and education. She also, interestingly, wrote celebrity profiles, including Gordon Ramsay, Lou Reed, and Juliet Stevenson. After 30 years as a journalist, she turned to writing books about parenting and major transitions in life, such as the empty nest and retirement. They're subjects close to her heart as well as her own stage in life. She has two sons and a daughter in their 30s and four grandchildren. Her kids all boomeranged in and out of their home in her 20s, but her nest in London is finally empty, apart from her husband, who is a molecular biologist. You'll find links to her new book and her other three books, The Empty Nest, Not Fade Away, How to Thrive in Retirement, and Conversations with Mothers and Daughters. I've read three of the four books, and they're insightful and full of information you can use in thinking about any and all of those transitions.
Hey, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Joe.
So I've enjoyed reading three of your books, of your four books, and I have one question to start with. Why do so many parents today have closer relationships with their adult children than previous generations?
I think it's a really interesting question. And I think I used to think it was just wishful thinking. As parents, we like to think we're almost friends with our adult children now, and it seems very different. But I was reading some research by the University of Texas, which seemed to prove that in fact, it found that about half of young adults report some form of contact with their parents, either every day or nearly every day, which seems pretty amazing to me. And that's compared with 40 years ago, it was sort of once a week. So there's clearly truth in it. It isn't just our kind of wishful thinking. I think the rise in single children families and the trend towards smaller families means that parent-child, adult-child relationships are strengthened to some extent. But I think there's something else going on, which is to do with the fact that it seems to take adult children much longer to grow up and become fully fledged. You know, emerging adulthood is now thought 29 compared to 25 a few years ago. And, you know, in our day, it was, 21, really. So, and it can be seen as a negative thing, but I think of it as a very positive thing. I think adult children continue to need support, and the support we can give them in their 20s is a really good grounding for the rest of our relationship throughout the rest of our lives together with our kids. So that's obviously part of it is to do with economics, the unstable job market, COVID, the pandemic, all kinds of things mean that kids are dependent in very practical ways. And certainly in the UK, vast numbers of people under 34 still live with their parents or they move in and out of the family home. Again, this is often seen as a bit negative and some parents feel they failed to launch their child and all of that. But I personally, all of my three children moved in and out of home in their 30s with partners, without partners. And I found it really has strengthened our relationship because we got to know each other as adults. I got to know them as adults. I tried not to mollycoddle them too much. And I think it just gave us that opportunity to get to know each other in their adult life. And I think that's a really good thing, because after all, we're going to have, you know, nowadays we have sort of 5 or 6 decades on the planet together, if we're fortunate. And so it really is a lasting relationship. And there's, and of course, we want our kids to grow up and have separate fulfilling lives, but at the same time, they want to know we're there for them. So I think on the whole, it's a good thing. And I think that's partly why we are closer.
You note in your new book, All Grown Up, that these relationships are complex with multiple layers and mixed emotions. What are the biggest challenges that you see people facing in evolving and maintaining a strong relationship with their adult children?
Well, I think the central crux of it is that label, adult child. You know, you want an adult relationship with someone who is your child, someone who was utterly dependent on you 20 years ago, or however long ago, when they were little. You know, you still hear parents telling their children or remarking on the way their kids eat, for example, or the clothes they wear or whatever. And you hear middle-aged children, adult children saying, "I'm not a child, Mom." I have to confess that not long ago, I found myself wagging my finger at she was 28 then, actually, so it was a couple of years ago. And it was my daughter sort of telling her off. And I just realized it was completely out of order. So I think, you know, there is that difficulty. It's quite hard to move on. I mean, we never quite get it right. And of course, we never stop worrying about them. There's this fierce primeval protectiveness that you feel towards your child that never goes away. I've heard a 92-year-old the other day saying the only good thing about getting older is that you don't worry about the children quite so much. Well, his kids were in their 60s, for goodness sake. So I think it's that anxiety is very irritating to children, adult children. My mum's anxiety and sort of concern used to really get to me. And at the same time, parents tend to have a sixth sense that something is wrong. So, and parents can feel very frustrated that because they don't see their children every day, it's quite hard to get to the bottom of what is wrong with their child, and their child may not want to tell them. And so that can be really, really very challenging. And the whole thing about support, we want to support our children, but we don't know how much support we ought to give without interfering with their lives or without being overindulgent, without making life too cozy for them. Our natural thing is to come up with a solution, to don the Batman cape and say, "Oh, right, we'll sort it out." But actually, you've got to let them kind of get on with it. And then, of course, there's the whole thing that they do things that you don't disapprove of, that you don't like. And that's inevitable. It's part of the generational thing. It just has to be. But it can be very painful, you know, if they do things that you really would much rather they didn't, if they choose partners you don't like, or if they choose a sphere of work that you don't really think is good enough for them or is not quite right for them. And you want your children to uphold your values, basically. And the chances are they probably won't, because children tend, you know, the younger generation wants to do things differently. So I think there is a kind of inbuilt conflict, as well as all these sort of personal things that go wrong. And ultimately, the relationship is on their terms, I think. On the whole, if they don't want to see you, they don't have to. They can vote with their feet. That's quite scary for parents. And you really don't want your adult child to just want to come see you out of duty. You want them to really want to see you. So I think that lies at the bottom of it all as well.
It really is a balancing act.
Yeah, it really is.
At times.
It really is a balancing act, yeah.
I've definitely been on the other side of that. We're not kids anymore conversation. And that kept your attention.
Absolutely.
So as you described that balancing act, independence and identity are two interesting factors that you wrote about. How did they change over the course of the relationship?
Well, obviously, when your children are young, they, as I say, they're totally dependent on you. And I think adult children's independence has become this kind of holy grail of parenting, that it's the be-all and end-all. And of course, we want our children to be independent, but I think we're beginning to question really why it matters so much, and whether it really is that important, and whether we should really start to think about the relationship that we have with our adult children as kind of continuing interdependence. Because the balance shifts as we go through life. We depend on each other for all kinds of things, from company to support. And as we get older, as parents get older, of course, they rely much more on their adult children for real support. So I think it's much more helpful, rather than just thinking, oh, about independence and children have got to be independent, to see it as a sort of ongoing thing and something that happens quite gradually. And also for parents to think about their own independence. I think that's the flip side. Children can't really be independent unless we let them go, unless we develop our own fuller lives beyond the family. So I think that's quite an important thing to think about. I think I heard a Buddhist monk once say, the greatest gift you can give your child is to be happy yourself. And I think that's quite a good thing to bear in mind. But at the same time, of course, there's the old saying, you're only ever as happy as your least happy child. So you've got that kind of conundrum always to try and sort out. And as far as identity goes, of course, that changes all the time too. But you will always be their mum or dad. You may still be an adult child too. But once the hands-on kind of parenting role goes, then you can feel very redundant and a bit, who am I? And not sure of your place in the world. If that's happening at the same time as retirement or perhaps redundancy, which often does happen, it can be a real double whammy and very difficult to handle, I think. But then, of course, there are all of these new changes in identity when your child meets a lifelong partner, you then become a mother or father-in-law and you have to think about that whole new identity label. And of course, when you become a grandparent, then that's a whole new shift of identity. So there's, I think the thing about it is that you're changing all the time and your identity is changing all the time. You have to keep adapting. And that's the key to success, if you like, to be prepared to keep adapting and to realize that things never stay the same.
Great point. All of a sudden you're wearing multiple hats.
Exactly. Multiple hats.
And different ones, always new ones, but it keeps you going. What tends to be different with sons and daughters?
Well, I wish there was no difference, but I'm afraid I think there is. I have two sons and a daughter. My daughter's the youngest one. They're all in their 30s. And I'm afraid the old tropes are true about sons don't ring so often. They don't return your messages. And my daughter's much more open about chatting and with kind of talking about emotional matters, I suppose, things that really matter. So there's one woman I spoke to, she said about her daughter, you know, she felt the contents of their minds overlapped. Her and her daughter really kind of understood each other. Whereas with her son, she said, I'm really close to them, but I don't really get what's going on with them emotionally. So I think there's a difference. And I think the other thing is that women tend to be better at remembering birthdays and organizing gatherings and all of that, family holidays. I have to say my sons are pretty good at suggesting family holidays and things. So I feel like that's one thing in their favor. But I think you perhaps have to make more of an effort to connect with sons. And there's one woman in my book, she'd had a very frustrating time with her son, meeting him for lunch one day. And she felt they hadn't talked about anything. And so the next time she said, oh, let's play a round of golf. And they had a whale of a time and they had loads of fun and jokes. And they did talk about the things that really matter. I think it's really helpful to be able to maybe do things with sons, that it's a relationship which often responds better than rather than just sitting having lunch, actually go to a movie or go for a walk or all those kinds of things. I think that helps at any time if your relationship with a child feels a bit stuck. It really helps to just do something together and then you've got something to talk about as well as just the burning issues that you really want to find out about their lives. Yeah. I think, you know, again, with sons, things change when they marry. And the danger is to communicate through your daughter-in-law because they tend to be a bit more responsive. But, you know, what I really hope is that things are changing in this respect as men are being encouraged to open up much more about their feelings. I think sons are becoming much more happy to talk about these things with their parents. And I think that will carry on changing. Hopefully it will carry on changing.
But it sounds like you've got to meet them where they're at.
Totally. I think so. I really do think so. I think you have to respond to their situation and what what they're up to and not just think about yourself. Yeah.
And that makes sense with sons doing things can really set the stage, give you some momentum in the conversation and really help a lot. I'll have to look up these emotional matters that you mentioned.
Yes.
We tend to not look at, but those are great insights. So a big theme that I noticed in reading your new book is that context really matters. There are major life transitions that both parents and adult children go through. Sometimes they're happening, as you mentioned, simultaneously. Mm. What do people who navigate those transitions well do differently than those who don't?
Mm. Well, I think it's above all, it's to do with their attitude. They're ready to be flexible and adaptable, and they're open to change. I think as parents, we really have to be always ready to move on to the next thing, to think, you know, to be ready to accept it in a way, because the relationship is not set in stone. Things change all the time, and children, adult children, want to do different things. I think it's really important. I think we were just talking about that, to listen to each other, to really listen, to take on board what the other person is saying. This goes for adult children as well as for their parents. You know, to be prepared to question yourself and your views. There is a natural tendency to think as a parent that you've got the best solution, you're in the right, just because you are the parent. And it's hard to overcome that. But I think you really do. You have to be prepared to question your own views or what you think. It really comes down to empathy and being able to put yourself in your adult child's shoes. You know, we're all guilty of saying, oh, when I was your age, I, you know, had three children, da 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 da. It's really not helpful, I don't think, and probably quite annoying. I think it's much more helpful to think about what it's like to be 35 now, not what it was like to be 35 when you were 35. I think also that the people that negotiate these difficult transitions the best feel quite secure in their relationship with their children. They know that there will be crises and big changes, but they kind of feel that at the bottom of it all, the relationship is solid and it will continue. And so even if you go through a phase, as I certainly have with my children, where you don't see them very much, you know, when they first left home, I really didn't see them and perhaps didn't have much contact with them. I think the bottom line was I hoped that there was a sort of solid relationship. At the time, of course, I didn't. Now I know it's okay. At the time, I think it was quite difficult. It's a bit on a wing and a prayer. You're really hoping they will want to see you again and that this is just a natural kind of separation phase. But yeah, I think feeling secure in your relationship with your child and knowing that you still love each other, even though you're far apart and you're still there for each other, is really important.
Great point you made about not looking at it through our own experiences, what it was like when we were 35. Mm. I know it's my case, sometimes stories about when I was walking to school in a foot or two of snow every day, even in May and June. It seems to get, the snowfall gets higher and higher every year as I recount those stories. So I've been looking at it, really what it's like today to go through these different life transitions and life stages.
Mm. It's not that they're not interested in your life when you, back then. It's just, I think, using it as a sort of comparison and sort of some people can be quite accusatory and saying, you know, well, I was very responsible and I had a full-time job and the poor adult child is floundering still and trying to find their place in the world. And it's sometimes really not easy now.
Very different world as we know.
Yeah, different world.
So speaking of life transitions, our listeners will also be interested in another big life transition that you've written about in your book, Not Fade Away, retirement. What's hard about retirement that people don't fully expect?
Well, retirement is such an individual thing and everyone finds different things difficult. But I think an awful lot of people don't expect to find the loss of status difficult. A lot of people say, oh, no, I don't care about that. That's not going to bother me. But of course it does, because whatever job you do, whether you're a CEO or you sweep the roads, what you do is part of your life, a huge part of your life, and it's part of who you are. So I think that's one thing. Another thing which sounds rather strange, and certainly I found it strange when people I interviewed said it to me, was they missed doing things that they didn't look forward to. And they hadn't expected to miss that. So they really missed having to stand in front, address a meeting or whatever it happened to be. So, yeah, they missed not having to get out of their comfort zone. That really interested me because, of course, none of us want the Sunday evening blues, but we do want the Friday night, yeah, you know, it's the weekend kind of feeling, the sense of achievement. That's what we really want. And each challenge, each sort of thing that we dread doing has this wonderful sense of achievement and high afterwards. So I think people hadn't really factored that in, and that was, and then they learned how to. So I think you really have to keep making yourselves do things that you find really difficult. I mean, you no longer have to make yourself do really horrible things because that's a thing of the past, but you can still find enjoyable and fulfilling things that are a big challenge and that you might dread the day before. You might not look forward to. I think you really have to be proactive. That's the thing. Another thing people don't expect, that you have to be perhaps more proactive than you ever were in your working life, because it's up to you to make it work. It's you're holding the reins. Haven't got anybody, we haven't got a boss or anybody to sort of suggest things or tell you what to do. It's completely up to you to make it work. And I think that can be quite an unexpected shock.
Such a great point about challenge and stepping out of our comfort zones, because we don't stop growing once we retire.
No.
And when you take out that challenge out of the equation, to your point, you've got to be more proactive, create those opportunities, something that's fun, enjoyable, as you said, but has that bit of challenge, that bit of stretch to keep us growing in different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Because in fact, you can be much more fulfilled in retirement if you're willing to sort of take it on. But yeah, I think you absolutely have to take on the challenges. Yeah.
And what are some things that you've seen people do that keep them stepping out of their comfort zone just enough?
Well, I think they find volunteering roles that are challenged, that maybe answer, they're in keeping with some of their strengths, things they used at work, but they take them off in a different direction. Maybe they're mixing with completely different people, or maybe they go and work in a school and they're working with difficult people who they might find difficult or might be unfamiliar with them, might be come from a completely sort of different kind of background. I think those kind of things can be really helpful. And I think that social aspect is really important. I myself think there's a real danger in only mixing with people of your own age or roughly your own age in retirement. And I absolutely think it's important to mix with people of all ages, younger and older. I think it's crazy to keep people in some kind of ghetto, because that's what keeps you alive. And that, in lots of ways, that's what helps you to understand your adult children's world as well. It keeps you curious. You know, the main thing is to be curious, to stay being curious about other people's lives and not think that you've got all the answers, I think.
So much mutual learning that comes from those intergenerational relationships.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what's a key thing that people should do to prepare for retirement, but often don't?
I think one thing that's really incredibly helpful is to develop new interests outside work, a real hinterland of life, so new social activities and connections in the years before they retire or go back to an old interest that they had to give up because they were just too busy. And I think this can act as a really helpful bridge between your old life and your new life, because it's sort of bedded into your life. You've got something that you do regularly, whether it's play in a band or a book club or play tennis or any of those, anything that you do regularly that brings you in contact with other people. And it's a fantastic source of stability and continuity when everything else in your life is changing when you retire. You need some things that are just going to be stable and there for you and that give you a strong sense of identity, actually. Oh, I'm the person who is really good at playing tennis or whatever it happens to be. I think that building up that social interest is really important. And I think the problem is that, of course, an awful lot of people are far too busy to do that. It's all very well me saying that's what you should do. But I think if people can just set aside half an hour once a month in the years before they retire, just to think about that whole non-side, non-work side of life they would like to develop, and to just start exploring things that maybe they would like to pick up again that they had to drop in the past. Or, and if they can't find anything they're interested in, just start somewhere, anywhere. There's got to be something, and one thing always leads to another. But I think really building things up a couple of years before is a really good idea if you possibly can.
We have four adult children. Our youngest is 21. And so that makes us seasonal empty nesters each September. And you've also written a book about becoming an empty nester, and that got my attention. Mm. What advice would you offer people listening on that transition of becoming an empty nester?
Yes, well, for me, that was the most difficult transition, I must say, and that's why I wrote a book about it. I wanted to get advice from other parents or shared experiences of other parents. I really wish I'd known then that what I've discovered since, and that's that they leave this gaping hole in your life, but that gradually develops into a wonderful creative space that you can fill with whatever you want. You can do whatever you want with it. And that I also wish I'd known that the relationship with your child will probably get stronger. They will always need you in different ways. You know, I think I used to think, oh, my son will never want to see me again. He'll never come home, all of that. So I think all of these thoughts are not much consolation when they first leave, because I think you do just feel bereft. And I know I just wanted family life to go back the way it was. I miss them desperately. I really miss them a lot. And I think it's important to acknowledge that loss and acknowledge that it's a big deal. You've brought up this child and loved them for all these years, and now they're going. And of course it's a loss. And other people will say to you, oh, get a life, you know, whatever. And that's so missing the point, really is, because it's a thing. And I think you acknowledge it, but you don't dwell on it. You then, I think by acknowledging it, you can think, yes, also acknowledge your huge achievement. And then you can sort of move on and think about building a new relationship with your adult child and thinking of them in a new way, a process which is obviously already started, but really gets underway when they leave home. And then you can think about building your own new direction. I think the first step is to really try and think, shift the focus back onto you. The focus has probably, even if you work, have a very busy working life, your central focus is your children. And I think it's really helpful to just try and shift the focus onto you, onto your interests, onto your partner, if you have one. So rather than following them every move on social media or pinning all your hopes onto the next visit, of course you do that at first, and of course you worry about them. But I think gradually it's really helpful to think about the things you're going to do, the things that you're going to do with that time and that new kind of freedom. And that will really help your child as well as you. I mean, it'll be a big bonus. It's a win-win all around if you can do that. But it takes time, and I don't think people should beat themselves up.
So one last question, if I could. In reading your books, they don't shy away from any of the challenges, very directly focused on here are the difficulties, here are the trials and tribulations. But throughout, I get a sense in your books and talking with you today of underlying optimism, that there's a way to solve these things, there's a way to navigate through and keep the long game in mind. Word that comes to mind throughout your books that I hear makes a difference is attitude. I'd love to hear your thoughts for our listeners on how do you cultivate the right attitude to navigate all of these different transitions and still maintain that optimism that you clearly have.
Well, that's such a difficult question. I really don't know how you cultivate that attitude. I mean, I think I don't know if I'm a born optimist necessarily, but I think you just look, I think it's really helpful to talk to other people. I mean, that's partly what I do in the books, is all about shared experience, listening to how other people have coped with things. And that's part of both acknowledging that it's difficult, that these transitions aren't easy, but also seeing that there is a way through. And I think I've learned so much from my books, not just from talking to the experts, the psychologists and the psychotherapists, but also really from talking to other parents and who really sum up so articulately what the difficulties are they've gone through, but also on the whole, they've got through them really successfully. And the same with retirement. I came across some fantastic stories of people who had really made it work brilliantly for them and were having a wonderful time, you know, having the best time of their lives. So I think the process of it started with the empty nest, trying to find my own way through that. And that certainly gave me reason for optimism, talking to other parents. And I suppose it's made me feel more and more optimistic as I've gone on. So yeah, I suppose that's the thing, listening to other people.
It's such a great point, because in the coaching work that I do, I use a process called Design Your Life, developed by Bill Burnett, Dave Evans at Stanford. And a part of the process they refer to as prototyping, which is exactly a fancy term for talking to other people. Mm-hmm. And the clients I work with really come back energized from the conversation I have with others about retirement or other transitions. Mm-hmm. But they also have a realistic sense of the difficulties, but that underlying belief that it's going to work out in the end. It's just a process to work through. So I really endorse that, those comments, and I've seen the same thing. Thank you so much for such a great conversation, your insights. Can't wait for a future book if it comes. These three out of four have been really useful to read.
Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Scotty.
So what are some actions you can take following this podcast conversation? Here are a few to consider that are on my list. Number one, embrace change and roll with it. Sometimes when I hear people talk about retirement, it sounds like it's a very static phase of life. But in fact, it's not. It's highly dynamic. There's lots of changes going on, and you can either resist them, ignore them, sometimes my option, or you can embrace them. And I think this conversation today with Celia Dodd highlights the value of embracing the change and really evolving, in this case, your relationships with adult children or how you're thinking about your retirement. Anticipate that everything has phases to it. That's my second takeaway. And if you think about certainly retirement, we just talked about that in the last episode recently, it has phases. So does your relationship with your adult children. It's going to go through phases. Know that going in and look for opportunities to work through each phase, knowing that there'll be another to follow. Switching gears to retirement, number three is build your bridge. As Celia Dodd advises, I think it's really important to be thinking about, before you retire ideally, new interests you can explore. And while you certainly will be busy before you retire, see if you can carve out a little bit of time, as she suggests, to start looking into some things that you might be interested in. Try things, and especially try new things. And number four is, as you step into retirement, keep stepping out of your comfort zone. This is, I think, a really key one that she highlighted, that people she spoke with missed the things that they didn't want to do, the things they dreaded doing. That's because it got them out of their comfort zone and gave them a sense of achievement. And once you retire, you don't stop growing, and growing comes through stepping out of your comfort zone, doing something different. And so look for opportunities to do just that, things that'll give you new learning, new growth, and a sense of accomplishment. It'll make your retirement years much richer. Thanks for listening to Retirement Wisdom Podcast. We publish new episodes each Monday and twice a month on Thursdays. I also publish a bonus episode. You can find all of our episodes at a glance at our website, retirementwisdom.com, and you can browse guests and topics across 5 seasons. We cover a lot of ground, try to look at the multidimensional life that could be and will be your retirement.
Just one more thing before you take off. Is it time to design your new life after you graduate from the world of full-time work? Go to retirementwisdom.com and schedule a call today with Joe Casey. Working with an experienced coach like Joe can help you explore new possibilities and gain clarity on your future. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. See you next week.